So today is the last chapter of this beautiful book. Each chapter takes us higher and higher, and I recommend to everybody the last 11 chapters should be read at least twice. Very, very powerful. It's the master's own experience, and he's transferring it into words. And every chapter I read, it just shakes. Yeah. So today is the last chapter where he talks about the dawn of wisdom. Where after having gone through study, having met, gone through the teacher, read the scriptures, practiced it through service, through prayer, and through meditation, finally the final frontier that we have to cross, the final knowledge is explained very beautiful in this chapter. So there are two kinds of knowledge. One is knowledge and one is wisdom. So what is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? Because here, Swami Chinmayananda doesn't say knowledge, he says the dawn of wisdom. And in our Upanishads, it is called as apara and para vidya. Para means that which is beyond. Apara means that which is not beyond. So what is the difference between the two? So they say that anything you have read in the world, anything, it remains in knowledge. Anything, yes. Even the Bible, yes. Even the Quran, yes. Even the Bhagavad Gita, yes. Even the Vedas, yes. Even the Upanishads, yes. Everything is in knowledge. It's not wisdom. So we think, you know, I mean, the highest revealed by the Lord himself, by Jesus himself, or Buddha himself, or by Krishna himself, that is still lower? Yes. That's what the scriptures tell us, that all of this knowledge, but what is the difference between the Upanishads and a textbook of science? They are not the same. The textbook of science will tell us about the world. The Upanishads or the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita gives us knowledge which takes us to wisdom, points towards wisdom. So that is the difference between reading a book of mathematics and reading the Upanishads. But they are both knowledge. They are not wisdom. And that's why people who worship books, wrap them in a cloth and say, oh, the book has to be worshipped, are losing the purpose of the book. The purpose of the book is to take you to the highest. The book should not be worshipped. The book should be used to get the knowledge. So the book, whatever it is, whichever saints have revealed it, are all the knowledge, they are not the wisdom. What is wisdom and how do we get to it? We'll talk about that later. This is a story of Vivekananda. He was a lawyer in search of the truth, and he would go to every teacher and say, have you seen God? And the teacher would say, well, you know, yeah. So he said, okay. Anybody says, so he goes, and finally he goes to an ignorant monk whose name was Ramakrishna, who was a priest in a temple, uneducated, never went to school. And he asks him, have you seen God? And he used to worship the mother goddess, this Ramakrishna. He says, yes, I see God more clearly than I see you. So this ignorant so-called priest who had never gone to school had experienced that inner truth, the inner wisdom of oneness with God, which this Vivekananda, who was a lawyer, with all his knowledge, he had studied all the textbooks, knew everything about the world, and then he stays for 5 years at the master's feet, who is totally uneducated, and gets that highest knowledge and becomes Vivekananda, becomes a great teacher, who then spread this knowledge. So the difference between knowledge and wisdom, there's a very beautiful story. So there was this Zen master, this Buddhist master, and the student comes to him and says, master, I want you to teach me. So he says, okay, you know, you want to, but show, tell me what you know. So he says, I know this, I know this, I know this, I have read this, I have read this, I have read this, I have read this. All, everything he keeps talking about, how much he has read, and how much he knows, and how smart he is, the student is bragging. And the master keeps listening. Okay, you know all this? Good, very good, very good, very good. Okay, He says, then can you not teach me? The student tells the master. He says, yeah, yeah, I will teach, but let's have a cup of tea. So the master boils a cup of hot water, puts tea in it, and then the student is sitting across the table and the master is sitting here, and he puts two cups and he's filling the student's cup. And the cup fills to the top and he keeps pouring, and the cup overflows and it goes into the saucer. He still keeps pouring. From the saucer, it goes onto the tablecloth. He's still pouring. He says, master, stop, stop, stop. What are you doing? Can't you see the cup is full? He says, yeah, just as the cup is full, your mind is full. You have so much knowledge within you. You have so much pride of knowledge that I have no space to put anything. You first have to empty your cup. And then you approach the teacher with the idea that I need the knowledge. So teacher should be approached with humility, not with the arrogance that I already know it and I want to show off. So how do we, So what is the process? They say the senses are the ones that are running outward and chasing after sense objects. So the senses are controlled by the mind. So the body, the senses are controlled by the mind, the emotions. And then the mind has to be controlled by the intellect, by the wisdom. So the intellect, which has got wisdom from the scriptures, has to guide us on this path. But people get so influenced by what they see in the world, what they hear, or what they feel, or what they think, that they do not have the persistence to be on the path. And the obstacle in our spiritual journey is the vasanas. Vasanas is the long-standing habits that we have gotten used to. Over years, I have accumulated all these vasanas, and I'm so used to that, living in a particular way where nothing changed, because I have been living like this for years and years. Talking about getting used to, there's a little story. So this man was driving on the freeway at 55 miles per hour, which was the speed limit, and this police car came behind him. And so the man looked in the rearview mirror, saw the police car, and he was driving the speed limit. Suddenly he sped up, 60. The cop says, what happened? He chased after him, 65, 70, 75, 80. He's driving faster and faster, and the cop is wondering. Normally, you know, people slow down when they see the cop. This guy is speeding up. Finally, he puts his sirens and goes on the side and tells him, stop. And so this guy stops, and the cop says, you know, listen, you better have a good explanation. Otherwise, I'm going to give you a ticket. Normally, people slow down. Why did you speed up? He says, well, it's like this. Last year, my wife ran away with the cop, and I thought you're here to bring her back. So he had gotten used to living without his wife, and he didn't want situations to change. And same how we are. We get so used to living in a particular way that when things are changing, we don't like that. And so the vasanas are our habits or tendencies that we need to change. We need to work on them. And each one of us has some habits, some tendencies that we feel are not right and that we should change. And how do we do that? By being a witness. So throughout the day, watch when your mind of desires are arising, whether they are good or bad, or whether these desires will take me upward or take me downward. And constantly being a witness, there are good thoughts, good emotions, bad emotions, joy, sorrow, whatever is arising in the mind, if I become a witness, then that is the way. So not only in meditation, but also throughout the day, one should be a witness. And when we work with sincerity and constant effort in this direction, sincerity and constancy are very, very important. We have to work with that kind of attitude that this is my goal, this is my purpose. And when we do that, then divine grace will shower upon us, just as we see the beautiful rain showering upon us. So a person who is a spiritual seeker and on this path clearly experiences the divine grace. And the divine grace is everywhere. It's in the rain, it's in the wind, it's in the sun, it's in the moon, it's even in these chairs. In these chairs, you see the Lord as existence. It is Like today when I was sitting alone and the room was empty. And I closed my eyes, and when I opened them, suddenly I saw all these chairs as that. That also is the existence. So you don't have to go to a temple or church to see God. I mean, yeah, that is the place. But you can see God anywhere and everywhere as existence, as life, as consciousness, as the rain, as anything. So God is available everywhere. All you have to do is have the eyes to see that. You can start by closing your eyes and experiencing the presence within. And that's what we do in meditation. But eventually, the masters can see the divinity everywhere. All they have to do, they can open their eyes and walk through the world and see God everywhere. If you close your eyes, it is easy to experience the Lord within. But when you open your eyes and if you can see that, then that is good. So that is how they say you should practice. Start by closing eyes, and then by open your eyes, you see God everywhere. See them in the trees that are growing, the grass, the green grass, the beautiful air, the crescent moon, the birds flying, like you were saying, the birds chirping. And everywhere you can see the presence, but also you can start seeing in inanimate objects. Not only in animate objects that are alive, but even objects that are not alive, this divinity is there. The example they give is like the ocean and the waves. So the ocean is still, ocean is deep, ocean is, when you go to the bottom of the ocean or the inner, the ocean is very peaceful, very silent. But on the surface, there are tremendous, powerful waves which are arising and falling. One wave arises, second wave, third, thousands of waves are arising constantly and falling. But the ocean is constant, the water is constant. So similarly, in me, there is this Om, this light of consciousness, which is constant, and everything else is changing. My desires are changing. My body is changing. It was old and is young, now became old. My emotions are changing, joy and sorrow. My ideas, my thoughts are changing. The ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker is changing. What I was thinking as a child and as a youth, now my idea of myself is very different. And the world obviously is changing. The world's objects, the emotions, the thoughts, everything is changing. So in this changing world, look for the changeless substratum. Look for the changeless support. Just as the ocean is the support of all the waves, so this consciousness is the support of the whole universe. And just as the waves arise from the ocean and merge back into the ocean, so all of us, this whole BMI, PFT object, the whole universe arises from that consciousness and merges back into the consciousness. So pay attention to what is permanent within me, not what is temporary. My body is changing, my emotions, my ideas, my desires, the world is changing, but there is one constant, and that I am. So that I am is not separate from me. So God is everywhere and God is within me as life, as consciousness. So once you experience that permanence, the masters say that they can experience that within themselves, and then they can experience it everywhere, in all objects, in all things. I heard a very beautiful saying. It was in one of the books. This master says, I used to live in the world and make time for God. So I used to live in the world and make time for God. Now I live in God and make time for the world. Yeah, so I still do all my duties. I still take care of my family, whatever I have to do. But I live constantly in that divinity. And I live in, and I work in the world. In our case, it is other way around. We live in this world, but once in a while, we make time for God. Okay, on Sunday morning, I'll go to church, or Thursday evening, I'll meditate. So we find time for God when we can, but the masters are opposite. They live in God and make time for the world. They do whatever they have to do, but they never forget, just as we never forget the world, even when we are sitting in the temple or the church, we are always remembering, what do I have to do after I finish my temple or my church or my, what do I have to do? So we never forget the world, even when we are in the presence of God, when we are sitting in front of God, suddenly the cell phone rings and we talk for 10 minutes and then we say, okay, God, wait for a while, let me finish this call and then I will get back to you. So that's how we live. But a wise person always lives with God and makes time for the world. So once we go deep within, then you come to this abode of peace, the inner peace, which Jesus called as peace that passeth all understanding. That is peace that is beyond any understanding, any description. And Vivekananda, the same master, said that immortality is your birthright. We, all of us, are qualified to reach it. It is our right. We just don't go out and take it. We don't grab it. You know, it's available to us. We just feel, oh, it's too difficult, it's too far, I don't think I can reach, I don't think I can know it, I don't think I can, you know, experience that. So we are all the time putting it off, that sometime in the future, maybe, or maybe in the next life or somewhere I will. But we have to hold on to it, possess it as my birthright. And that is the essence of this chapter. There is more in the book, but I thought rather than going into details of what Swamiji has already covered, I try to give some additional ideas. And please go home and read this chapter again, because it is very good. A lot of details are given, which I didn't want to repeat because, you know, people can read it on their own. Any questions, any comments? Yeah.
It's grasping your birthright, the same thing some spiritual teachers call just being, where you're not in mind but just letting yourself be and exist without over, you know, I mean, you're just living in that grace.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very good, because one is doing and one is being. So doing is where I'm doing something. I'm lighting a candle, I'm chanting a mantra, I am reading the scriptures, I am, you know, teaching, like I'm talking. Those are all doing. And everything is doing. But being is be in that awareness, and right? And that stillness.
You can act out of that beingness.
Yes.
It's different. And that's my lesson in this life, very much so. And this one thing I wanted to share, when you talked about divinity, even in forms that are not animate. One time I was walking my dog, and something that would tend to irritate the mind is people leave a lot of trash in my apartment complex. But there was a styrofoam cup there, and I forgot my dog's bags for his excrement. So it was like that was there perfect for me in that moment, and it didn't disturb my mind that day. So I mean, when you start opening up, you see those things in a different. Mm-hmm. You can see those things differently.
Right.
It doesn't happen all the time yet, but
occasionally. No, that's true. If you start paying attention, and you can do that with your eyes open. Yes. But no, the people who have experienced that being, then when they function in the world, that's when the words of wisdom come out. That's where the Bible and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita all came out from the mouth of people who were in the being,
right.
Not in doing, but in being.
But then groups of people.
Becoming. Yeah. We are always becoming something.
Right.
Yes.
You have to be, you know, becoming is, we are always in the process of becoming.
In the world, yeah, yeah, that's different. Yeah, I know, and there's nothing inherently wrong, but it's still not the highest.
Yes, because when you are becoming something, as she said, you're still looking for it outside. That when I, and it's in the future, becoming is always in the future. I will become realized. Or I will one day realize, then again that is becoming. But I am, that is being. That one is I will be and one is I am. That's the difference.
And the irony is, from every one of these great teachings, people have formed structures that become away from the highest to every one of them. There's different sects of
yes.
Christianity, and they've gotten away from it. It's just interesting how that happens.
True. And then making
this ironic.
Right. Big buildings and idols and then
doing.
Right. Then the idol becomes real, but the idol is indicating the ideal. That's how when we look at Jesus on the cross or look at Krishna or look at Buddha, they're all indicating that higher truth. They are not the highest, but they are representing, just as the national flag represents the great United States of America. When I see the star, stars and stripes is not the U.S., but it represents the U.S. That's why we salute the flag. So similarly, this idol we bow down to and prostrate and offer our respects, understanding that the Jesus I'm looking at is the Father in heaven, or the Krishna I'm looking at is that total consciousness. So that is the difference between the idol and the ideal, the goal.